He came home one day, and this happened, what? Tell us what it happened so everybody will understand.
Well, let me start by saying my Friday, he didn't really look good to me. You know, and, you know, he just looked really, like, to me, looked weak. He didn't seem himself. He said he was, you know, I asked him, are you okay? He's fine. I said, okay. You know, Saturday rolls around. He goes out to pay a bill. I said to him, what time is he back? I don't know. So he comes home and he says, I feel sick as a dog. I said, he goes, it seems like to me I might have a flu. I said, well, go lay down. I'll get you an alfalfa. He went to go lay down. That was the end of that. You know, he stayed in bed all day. Sunday rolls around, it's Easter Sunday. He stayed in bed all day. He had a fever.
At this point in time, no one is worried, is thinking that he has anything beyond a flu or a cold or anything of that nature.
No.
So you took him to the hospital on which day? On Monday?
I took him to the hospital Sunday.
Sunday, yeah.
The day before he passed away. And we went about 12 o'clock. And, you know, they took him in. They gave him an IV, you know, because he was dehydrated at the time. They took some blood from him. We stayed there for about 3 hours. And they said he just had an intestinal infection. That's what they had told me. So, you know, he still had a high fever when he left. He had 102 when he left. We went to the hospital, it was 101.
Did they ever tell you when he checked into the hospital, did they say that we think he has a hantavirus?
No.
You didn't know
they gave him a prescription for antibiotics, they released him.
And sent him back home.
This was Easter Sunday with no pharmacies open, no nothing.
So he couldn't even get the prescription?
They gave him like one pill, like the antibiotic they had prescribed to him. And that was it.
Okay, I got to take a little break. When I come back, we'll ask the doctor, Dr. Fisher, maybe she can give us some more insight into how can this happen this way. But again, it's another case where a person goes to the hospital, they see he has a little temperature, a little flu, you got to have an intestinal virus, so take this antibiotics and go home. And to me, I'm saying here, maybe we should not be afraid of the viruses. But the more and more I hear stories like this, the people I'm becoming afraid of are the people that we trust with our lives. And these are people who take all these government grants to get these degrees, have them, don't pay back the money. I'm going to start talking to doctors, Dr. Fisher. They don't pay back the money, and then the next thing you know, we have things like this happen. I want to know how this happened and why, and we'll be back right after this. By what is now this new wave of, not new, but they've been affected by these bacteria and viruses that we've been hearing so much about. Shrika, I got to ask you, you were pregnant at the time when this started, and you had just given birth to a brand new baby boy, is that right?
I was expecting a girl from the sonograms. But
both of you were expecting a girl.
Yeah.
And, when this was going on, you're pregnant? Him passing away, Bruce, was the farthest thing from your mind, was it not?
Yeah, I didn't expect him to die, you know what I'm saying? It was just like a shock.
How soon after his death did they tell you what he died from?
Maybe like 2 or 3 weeks later.
Well, what happened was, we called the medical examiner that Thursday ourselves, and, we wanted to know because there were so many rumors. It was AIDS, it was this, it was that. And we were worried if it possibly was that she was pregnant. And we wanted these things done and known. And they told our sister that they had tested for the hantavirus, but it wasn't that. They had suspected it, but they gave them the test, and it wasn't that.
And then they came back to say that it was that.
It wasn't until May 1st that we got a phone call that, I guess, Atlanta confirmed that it was the hantavirus.
Okay.
All right, hold on a second. Dr. Fisher, I got to call on you again to help us out here, because how many cases have we seen in the last year or so, and why could something like this go undiagnosed and I guess unsuspected?
Actually, there have only been 2 cases. This was the second case in the past year. Hantavirus is a virus that wasn't known in the United States until 1993, and then there was an outbreak of 20, 30 patients who had a similar illness. In the Southwest, in what's called the Four Corners area. It's Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, Colorado. people, and they didn't know what the risk factors were then, had high fevers, headaches, just didn't feel well, flu-y. But then they all developed a cough and shortness of breath, and they actually went into respiratory failure, which means that they were unable to breathe at the time. It took a while. Blood specimens and others had to be sent to the Center for Disease Control, and finally they found out it was the hantavirus. The hantavirus is known in Asia, actually in Korea. It was caused a big outbreak during the Korean War. Hundreds of people had it. Your fiancé was the second one in New York State to be diagnosed with it. Just again, so people know, individuals, non-doctors, can't say, I have hantavirus. But what they can know, and you told me about this earlier, is that your fiancé had shortness of breath. Yes. And you actually called the hospital, and they didn't say to come in right away. Certain things, you have to recognize signs, if not symptoms of disease. People should recognize high fevers, chest pain, shortness of breath. You do what you did. You get into a hospital and again try to get to a good one.
Why can we not find a doctor like you that we can give somebody to interview and say, Doc, give us all those things we ought to look for? Especially now, there's only been two cases in New York State. Is this something that New Yorkers should be afraid of? I'm hearing this thing about, you know, don't go out and cut grass with a lawnmower that blows the stuff in the air, because if the rat does the thing in the yard, you're blowing it in and you're breathing in, and next thing you know, you got it.
Again, not afraid of, we have to keep calm here, but be aware of and recognize the symptoms. The two cases, one was supposedly acquired probably in Shelter Island. It was a young college student in Rhode Island who had spent the summer at his family home in Shelter Island and probably was exposed to mats or rat droppings. It spread by urine and stool, really, from mice. And your fiancé, I understand, was a landscaper out on the South Shore of Long Island, out by Amagansett. And that's probably where he caught it also. Not to be afraid, to be aware. The first case, we don't assume, after one case, you don't assume everyone out of millions who have a cold or high fever have hantavirus. Second one, we now recognize that it is a risk there. Again, shortness of breath has to be evaluated. Not your responsibility to make the diagnosis, but it is responsibility of the good doctor.
So when you call in for something like that, you say, I'm having fun for a day. I'm going to go see somebody until I get something done. We have to take a break, but before we do, I'd like to introduce someone else. My next guest is a survivor from the strep that is commonly known as the flesh-eating bacteria. Please welcome Juan to the show. Juan. We'll take a break and come back and hear the rest of your story, but you were working, you dropped something on your foot?
I dropped a lawnmower
on
my foot, thought nothing of it, I said it hurts, of course, you know, when you drop something, you know, it's going to hurt. But that's all I thought.
That's all you thought. When we
that's
take,
all I thought.
When we come back from this break, you tell us what you ended up finding.
Sure enough.
We'll be back right after this.
At noon, I start feeling a little discomfort on my foot. I said, no, it'll go away. You know, it's that bump, a bruise, you know. It'll go away. Nothing to worry about. By Saturday, I noticed that my foot starts getting a little bit swelling on my foot. So I live with my mom today, and she gives me a home remedy, ice, you know.
And then a little heat.
And then a little heat.
Neither
and the ice
more.
Didn't work.
Okay.
Neither one. Okay, so I say, well, you know, maybe, and then she says, well, if you sleep tonight with a wet towel, you know, wrapped up around it, you know, it should be okay tomorrow. I said, yeah, it should be okay tomorrow, you know, I've got to work Monday. Okay, this is what I thought, but let me tell you what actually happened. By Sunday, I cannot put my foot down on the floor. Because of the pig. And I looked at it, and it looked almost like a small little balloon had popped up. My first idea, thought, went through my head was maybe I fractured a bone. Maybe there's a small bone on my foot.
So let's go to the hospital, get some x-rays,
let's
and see what
right,
happens.
Get a cast, and on with life.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
But you walked in that hospital thinking you were going to get a cast. How did you walk out?
Without a leg.
Because they finally figured out that, well, I didn't finally figure out. You went to the hospital yourself and said, hey, something's wrong here. And they looked at it, they diagnosed you as having this bacteria, and you've now had to have your foot amputated?
My whole leg was amputated.
Your whole leg?
Right above the knee.
Right.
So I don't have a knee. You want to see how it looks like? This is not to scare anybody, but, you know, just to let people know that I'm a survivor. My whole purpose of this me being in New York City today and talking to all of you is to make you aware that things like this happen, okay? Because I wasn't aware of it, you know? So I want to make sure, you know, if I can only take one of you out there, whoever is listening to me today, you know, whoever it is, I don't care who it is, where, save them, you know, from having to have
to live this way.
Yeah, this done to you, you know, from a small cut, you know, it can happen.
Dr. Fisher, help me out.
It can happen.
This happened. Now, this was not a misdiagnosis from a doctor, so I will take back anything I've said about doctors, but we all get a nick or a scratch or a cut. How do you know that it went from a nick, scratch, cut to this?
This is hard to know, and this is a little less avoidable than the other cases were today. The streptococcus, again, is a bacterium, has been around for hundreds of years. It's actually the bacteria that causes strep throat. People have heard of rheumatic fever can come from it. There's something called glomerulonephritis that can come from it, and also strep throat. This is a slightly, not slightly, it's a much more dangerous, what we call virulent strain of bacterium. We don't know why it seems to be on the increase a bit now. What people can recognize is this. Usually if you cut yourself or nick yourself, you put on a topical antibiotic, you clean it with alcohol, it gets better. Signs to look for, and again, no one here can say I have streptococcal skin infection, or what we call necrotizing fasciitis. But if they get a fever with a skin infection, if you have a skin infection that's spreading rapidly, if you have terrible pain that seems to be out of proportion to the smallness, the size of the cut, if you see blister formation, and you mentioned a little balloon, that's a bad sign. If you see pus coming, get to a doctor. It may be nothing, but get there, get evaluated. If picked up early, treat it with intravenous antibiotics and often with surgery.
I've got to take a break, but let me just ask you, because I'm one of those nutcases when it comes to a little cut. Here's what I do. I get a cut. I go right to the bathroom, I take a bottle of hydrogen peroxide, I swear to you, open the top, pour it on. If it sizzles, okay, that's all right. Then I take the alcohol while it's still sizzling, and I pour it on. Then I wrap it in a Band-Aid, and I think I'm okay. Dumb or smart?
Smart. You usually are okay, but if it starts hurting a day or two later, or if you get a fever, look at it again. Just keep an eye on it.
Keep an eye on it. Okay, I'm going to take a little break, and we'll be back right after this. No one knows what to call it, whether it's a bacteria, a virus, or what. Please welcome Gulf War veterans Brian and his wife to the show. Well, a lot of you have seen the fact that we have done a show about this before, and there are still a lot of unanswered questions. I hate we don't have a lot of time, but Brian, why don't you tell us what kind of medical problems you have experienced as you've come back?
Yes, Bonto, I suffer a lot from shortness of breath, fatigue, being tired constantly, diarrhea, being constipated, fevers all the time, being sick with the flu, muscle aches and pains, swelling in the joints, lymph nodes swelling up, and now sex part of it with burning semen, and after ejaculation, the oozing and burning sensation that goes on for anywhere from 2 hours.
And this isn't only what you felt, Lisa, you have felt this, is that correct? Yeah. We have guests on the show before, and I'm not trying to make anybody sick, and all, but I've had three or four wives that I've talked to, all of them say the same thing. Their husbands came back from the Persian Gulf, they could not have sex with them because it was almost as if they would burn them every time the husband's penis came in contact with them. It was almost as if you've had a miscarriage since he's been back home. So both of your children are now sick. Is that correct?
We have four that are sick.
Four children that are sick. All of them are sick in the house. And no one has given you an answer yet to what's your problem?
No, sir. You go to the doctors. It's a small town clinic. And you kind of even hate to go there anymore. You go in there sick. Well, you have a virus. Take some Tylenol. Take this antibiotic. If it doesn't get better, come back.
Come back. So, doctors. Now we've got them all here. Every different kind of virus and bacteria that we've at least heard about a little bit in the news in the last couple. What's going on?
There's something in common. Do you understand that? There's something in common with these folks, and that is the fact that while this good doctor says you should be aware of these symptoms, your doctor should know these symptoms, the fact of the matter is your doctor does not know this. The Center for Disease Control has $100 million. That's their budget to spend on infectious disease. That is inadequate. There is not sufficient preparation for the troops on the ground. The medical troops on the ground need to be informed. And let me tell you about Desert Storm Syndrome and the risk to the public. One of the factors contributing is a parasite called leishmaniasis. This is as old as the Bible, and it has plagued and killed people from the beginning of time. There's a form of it called visceral leishmaniasis, and now we have a new form coming out of Desert Storm Syndrome, particular to these vets. Walter Reed Medical Hospital, their tropical disease expert, estimates that there are 35,000 vets with this disease. This is a blood-borne disease.
No.
These vets are, in fact, giving their blood. Yes, it is.
You disagree with that. This little institute's going to have to get a break. When I come back, I want to find out what's going on.
It is transmitted via the bite of the sand flea, the saliva. However, should one who is suffering give their blood, that blood is contaminated. And these vets are constantly recruited to give their blood. As a matter of fact, there is an award called the General Ronald Blank Reward, or Award for blood donation.
Especially if you're on active duty or you're a reservist and you give blood.
It is also sexually transmitted.
That's a fact, because I used to do that all the time. I'll take a break, we'll be back right after this. Fish, maybe you can answer this. Years ago, I can remember when we first started talking about the AIDS virus, every magazine, every newspaper immediately called it the homosexual cancer. And then don't worry about it, it's not going to affect us. It can't affect you, you can't get it unless you have sex. Next thing you know, it's in the blood supply. Next thing you know, we don't really know how you get it. We don't even know if this virus, HIV, really gets it. We don't know what's going on with this. Are we going to find out the same thing 5 years from now when it comes to the hantavirus, when it comes to this meningitis, when it comes to this? What's going on?
Well, first, I just want to address back to the other segment. Okay. The whole Gulf War syndrome, people have to understand it is a set of symptoms that I believe 5 or 10,000 soldiers who have been stationed in the Gulf War, and this was back in 1990, 1991, complain about.
That is incorrect.
Let me finish.
Absolutely incorrect.
But the symptoms are, as far as I understand, and I don't profess to be an expert, I'm an infectious disease specialist, but headache, muscle aches, joint aches, fatigue, memory loss, intestinal problems. I must say, as of yet, there is no one diagnosis that explains everything. There is absolutely no proof that it is transmitted by an infectious agent. I must give you the facts for now.
You must be checked with Dr. McGill at the Walter Reed Army Hospital, who will inform you that by his own calculations, there are at least 30,000 vets infected with leishmaniasis parasite. There are a number of factors contributing to Desert Storm Syndrome, including chemical warfare agents. Those which are contagious to the direct public, to the general public, include bacterial warfare agents.
You know, we keep hearing stuff all the time, literature coming out by different writers and people saying that a lot of things like this Ebola virus and the way that it's kind of mutated and now it's doing its new thing is all because of chemical warfare agents. We've heard that drug warfare is all because of chemical warfare agents. Did we do this to ourselves? Have we gotten so smart that we've done this for
ourselves? There is absolutely no proof, and I believe it's paranoia and unnecessary.
Okay.
Let me say,
in Saudi Arabia, I don't believe it.
And these were canisters that were both exploded and non-exploded silver canisters with different coloring, skulls, and crossbones. I was told to set up there. Now, Montel, if you were radioing in a tank, this is your position. You see these. Are you going to stay there?
I'm not me.
I don't mean paranoia. There certainly was chemical exposure. We know that the burning oil wells in Kuwait released petroleum. Now, that's not paranoia. What I'm saying is paranoia to say that it's a state or government created.
Okay. I got to conclude the show. I'll take a break. I'll come back. I guess maybe what I want is the bottom line. Should we be so afraid, or should we just, is there somebody we can write to? Somebody we can call? Can we call a congressman, a senator? Can we all write letters to the president and say, do something? Tell me what we need to do today. We'll be back right after this.
Still using Western Union to wire money?
A 1-800-FOR-VIDEO. Major credit cards accepted. Please indicate show date and topic.
We are out of time, so I want to thank all our guests for being here. I get a lot of letters, and I'm better than myself, I'm better than all our countries, saying and asking questions about this Gulf War syndrome. I will do another show about this. I'd invite the both of you back to talk about this and bring the information out to the public. But what do we do today? Do we write the president and say, get off your butt and do something? What do we do?
The most important thing for individuals.
1-800-US-SEARCH, America.
Well, explain a little bit about why I felt it important for you to see this particular brief run through of some of the disease elements that you're up against. And you can take Ebola, you can take any of the HIV viruses, because they will mutate every time they have a new host. and don't be concerned about an HIV virus. That is not your problem. The HIV virus is a lazy little hound dog that crosses over into cells, and you can't get through the cell wall with any kind of oil-based medication. Now, early on in the disease, I said it is a tertiary syphilis, because in every Kaposi lesion, now Kaposi sarcoma is a cancer, so keep in mind mutation, mutation of cell, mutation of organism. Nobody dies of HIV virus. It doesn't do anything. It can cause a lessening of your immune system. That's all it can do. But it does cause a mutation of every element, bacteria, whatever comes in contact with it can change its DNA structure of the organism that is going to cause pneumonia, cancer, whatever is the failing element that finally wipes out a body and kills a body. You will find it mutating and becoming a tuberculin disease. You will find it becoming a carcinoma, as in Kaposi's. You will find it becoming a pneumococcus, only a much enhanced, almost impossible to treat version of whatever the microbe is that is being utilized here. And it will be whatever you pick up that your immune system cannot handle. And if you pick up tuberculosis first, that's what's going to kill you. If you pick up a pneumococcus first, that's what's going to kill you. Pneumonia will get you. But you think about it. In AIDS patients, HIV doesn't do anything. It's just there in every instance. So there's a long shot difference between HIV positive and active AIDS. This has been dumped on you so that you won't ever know the difference. And anytime you hear AIDS, you panic. Fatal disease. Doesn't have to be a fatal disease. It is just not being treated. Now, at the onset of AIDS, I said it then, I'm going to repeat it. It could have been wiped out entirely with the first sick people. Because what happened with penicillin? First, you had aqueous penicillin when they finally created it and worked it enough to bring it into an injectable form. But it didn't last very long. But it did move through the membranes, move through the cell walls. And if you would treat an active AIDS patient with a massive, I mean really hit, IV, aqueous penicillin, stops it. Kills it. But they didn't want that happening, and you know that you would have by now moved on to the long-lasting non-aqueous penicillin. And that's what was being given to the children and so forth. Well, its base, or its carrier base, will not pass the membrane walls. How could you know that you had something that could be even classified as a spirochetal disease? Spirochetal, I suppose, is the proper term. A spirochete is different from a cocci or a bacillus. It is a wiggly serpent-looking thing, and it swims, much like a sperm, or it moves. But its major death-dealing blow comes when it gets into the brain cells. And once again, they were very careful to produce a penicillin that would not pass through the cell structure, so that once syphilis got into the nervous system or the spinal cord, would go straight to the brain, and it would literally make people insane. So once syphilis would grow to the point that the spirochetes and the disease itself worked itself into the spinal canal, you knew it was over. by always being able to incubate, culture out spirochetes out of a Kaposi's lesion, you knew you were dealing with nothing in the world but tertiary syphilis. And that told you all you needed to know, that this was being picked up through the bloodstream, through loose morals, I'm going to put that nicely, misuse of sexuality, because it was basically a venereal disease, pure and simple. Well, you can't have that, can you, unless you are going for a group of people. And that's what they were going for. Now, any of you who will have been watching the 500 Nations Indian stories will realize that the Americans, I'm sorry, I'm not going to paint this picture like you want it to go. The ones who came over and called themselves Americans were as heinous as any group of people that ever set foot on any nation anywhere. Now, we're talking about banksters. We're talking about people ripping off the Indians. And what did they do? They deliberately introduced smallpox into the Indian population. So what did they do with the World Health Organization when they wanted to start depopulation? You go there, you spread it to the more primitive people of Africa through injections. They don't know any better, and they have no resistance, really. And then it just spreads. You can get away. And they'll have their little test sites. And that's exactly what they've done with Ebola. And they treat it over there, oh, not to worry. Not to worry. You have no idea what's going on over there. They don't tell you what's going on over there. They expect at least three waves of this disease as it dies down, you know, to come back. And they don't have to tell the world what's happening over there. Who's going to notice Zaire today when you've got UN people chained to the targets in Bosnia? And you're having earthquakes. And you're having Oklahoma City bombs, you know, buildings bombed. And yet it is the most incredibly crucial thing that has happened in your world. Because they have been able to tinker with DNA structures. They have gone beyond the zinc molecule that holds the cap that keeps the body screwed onto the virus. The programming part of this crystalline virus has been held together with the zinc molecule. That is what is still predominantly out there. And they know, I know, now you know, that if you can knock out that zinc molecule, the crystalline thing disintegrates. Well, that wasn't going to work because they have found several things, including colloidal silver, that will knock that out. So they have replaced it with titanium. And you're going to have something. And now we're going to talk a little maybe above the heads of most, but I'm not going to make it more clear. You have colors that correspond to frequencies. You have colors that correspond to every element known to man. The color tone of the frequency or the ionization of silver is a golden yellow. And that may sound like, well, why don't you just have it gold? Why didn't you call it gold? Well, because AU stands for a term that means violet. You see, here you're getting into languages. And when you're talking about color tones, here's where they don't want you with the Russell material. They don't want you understanding it. Because you have to understand that everything is harmonic, tone, and frequency. You are an electric being. You are an electric world. That's all there is. It only gives you a perception of motion on an up and down scale. You measure time in a linear scale. But that's only perception of sequence of events. You don't go anywhere, you don't do anything. If there is motion at all, it is like this. It is just a pulsing up and down. So number one, you in the masses are not given the information that allows you really to understand what I just said. So we're going to go with what you need to understand so that you can understand why something might work. Gold produces a higher frequency than does silver. Silver will negate or take out the zinc molecule holding a virus together. Gold is a higher frequency than silver. Its color tone will be different. And when you get that color, you know you've got that frequency. So what we are able to do, and poor Charles has just sweat bullets every day. And some of it works, some of it doesn't. But I want to tell you, you've got enough now to start with if you just get your bottles to perfection. And we have demonstrated this so they can watch it go through. Its color changes right in front of your eyes. It is a miracle. You can take a yellow substance, and as that silver picks up the frequency of the gold, it'll turn violet like these iris over here. And when you're talking about the gold frequency, that is the color of gold frequency. And this is why Germain loved it. It is the transmutation flame. If you can get a pure violet, almost bordering on indigo, but violet flame, you can reduce, you know, you can alchemize things. You may not even feel the heat from it. But it's elements that make it up react to the heat of that particular colored flame. And right on down the line. You know, an old oily yellow flame will produce a lot of soot. So we're talking a little bit about the old base black carbon. Well, obviously what you're headed for or want to achieve is the frequency or the programming capability of the diamond, let's say. The highest frequencied or most programmable substance that you would recognize, crystalline substance, the gemstone, if you will. And we can pull it through all of these processes in their frequency and their color. So when we produce what will be called colloidal silver, others are going to come along and say, that is not colloidal silver. I'm telling you that is colloidal silver with gold, and the entire thing is the frequency of the highest of the Dreas in that bottle. Because we finish it off with Gondriana in the sun, and it picks up the cosmic rays. But it will hold the violet color. It isn't that everything in the bottle turns purple. It is that as the silver reacts to the gold frequency, it ups its frequency, and it doesn't become the element gold, but it comes becomes the frequency, and you're not going to be able to tell the difference. Now, why am I going through this? Because I want you ones to understand. You are the only ones on the face of this earth that has this product. And nobody else can make it because nobody else can have the Dreas. And I can't let any one of you understand enough about it to be able just to go off to Timbuktu and reproduce it. You might be able to produce something that will work a hell of a lot better than anything you've got on this place, but you will not have the Gondriana to do it with. Because we've now stepped up our research Gondriana. And even the Gondriana that you have does not have the frequency of what we have put together. And that was a show and a half. I'm sorry that all of you couldn't watch. You don't know whether to run in terror or whatever when you see this happening in what appears to be a glass jar full of water. And I noticed these ones, you know, wanting to get a cap to put it on. They were afraid it was going to take off. Well, it'll settle down, you know, after it reaches its violet purple. It'll begin to settle down into its silver gray and almost a crystalline silver reflecting kind of a thing. And then it's when you better watch out for the wood furniture. It'll set your house on fire. Now, I'm telling you this because it isn't like it is some big scientific something that will blow the lid off the world. It'll only save the lives of the world. And I know that none of you can comprehend that. And the minute that you comprehend it and go start pushing it or something, they'll take it away from you. They'll figure a way. I'm not here to save the world. That's going to be the biggest disappointment of all. I'm not even here to save your nation. I'm not here to build you back a constitution. Ron Jackson can do that. He's a good one to pull together people to go. And surprisingly enough about Ron, he will back off and he will listen to me. And how do I know that? Because I finally said, Ron, it is not good to call yourself a patriot. No, this is you're the patriot, and I don't care who you are. I will never consider myself anything but a patriot. And I said, what you're trying to do is reclaim your republic. And you have to build it. You cannot take what's there. It's rotten to the core. You're going to have to build a republic. Are you big enough to do that? And you know the kind of response you get. Well, who do you think I am? Of course I'm big enough to do that. You know, I have to go teach the men's a bunch. Well, I'm not interested in who he is. I know who he was. I know his capabilities of leadership if he ever gets moving. Whether it's stubbornness, idiocy, it doesn't matter. He can do. We don't have to worry about whether he can do it or not. We just have to worry about whether he will do it or not. And I choose to believe that he will. Because there have been numerous occasions that we have clashed. And he has gone my way. These are not things that Dorma's privy to, Rick, Alice, nobody. The man knows me, and he has a lot of fun with that. You know, he wants to smear this 12-foot lizard bit around and, you know, this sort of thing. I have a lot of patience. Everybody has their own calling, their own guide, their own teacher, their own mission. I am here to support and back and help and show the way. I don't want anyone around me to ever pick up a gun unless it is in defense and it happens to be there. As a for instance, force is not of God. You are not here to force anybody to change anything. That will be your downfall when you feel that the only way that you can regain freedom or anything else, which you better think about it, since the United States or any of the Americas were invaded by the Europeans, you have not had freedom. And that Constitution did not give freedom to the Indians from whom you stole and took by force this land. So when this land comes back into being a republic, it comes back into being a republic with equality and freedom for all. With a return of land to the people. And you see, now you have become we the people Indians. They've done to you exactly what they did to the Indians. Only they're going to kill you off and enslave you in a different way. It's going to be far more effective. Because there's so many more of you. There is no reason for them to want to come here and give you any trouble at all if you keep your nose clean. If they want you to drive 55 miles an hour and you drive 60, don't come bitching to me to try to get you out of a ticket. Whether you like it or not, that's the law of the land. Whether it's reasonable or right does not matter. It is the law of the land. And I tell you, follow the laws of the land and you won't get in trouble. Follow the laws of God. They will always tell you to follow the laws of the land unless they make it a law to go shoot somebody. Well, that's go to war. And I don't know what you're going to do when it comes right up against it and they start drafting you for your own civil war. They're a lot more clever than that, for one thing. They won't put it that way. They'll bring in the UN troops so that Junior next door, unless he hates you already, you see, you are breeding out conscience. And they keep testing this all along the way. So I don't know what will come out there. But you will be surprised. Some of the highest controllers are also the wealthy ones. They don't want the United States destroyed. They don't want a destroyed world. They can see that things have gotten completely evil. And some of these are partially evil, partially good, partially whatever. There's certainly no saints among them, including Germain. Don't worry about that. If you keep your own intent clean and you don't push for, oh, we got to have a group, we got to have a commune, we've got to have this, we've got to have a church. You see, I don't want to be offensive, but ones from back east would like to come out here and build a church and teach you how to meditate and touch God. And I'm trying to get you to touch God without all that garbage. You don't need anybody. We need unity and an information so that you know it isn't even a matter of you not knowing. This is entirely a matter of you remembering. And if you are forward-thinking enough to realize that there is a higher society, if you don't want to think of it any other way, then you certainly are capable of beginning to understand your mission. And you cannot have spent this many months and years with me and not know that you are basically at least my equal or higher in command. I'm not going to tell you which ones. But you came for mission. To serve. And we've got to go through all of this to get to the point where it evolves. You've got to begin to understand. Now, back to the subject in point. You are just as susceptible to any of these diseases as anybody else, with one exception, and that is, if you've been around us very long, you already have a much higher frequency. Because we've been working on you day and night to make blame sure that you do. Because there will come a time when we need you aboard, we need you on the ground, we need you to be able to go through a light beam. And it is simple as Star Trek, but you can get into a lot of trouble along the way. And that time will come. Therefore, you are not as susceptible to these man-made diseases, but once they get hold, they'll kill you just as well as anybody else. But not if your frequency of systematic, your system operation is operating at a frequency of gold. It can't knock you out. It may overwhelm you.